So good morning, everybody, and we thank our sponsors for this morning's shiur, Becky and Avi Katz from Teaneck, New Jersey, who are sponsoring Le'ili Nishmas David Ben Menachem Manish. We hope that he will have an Aliyas HaNeshama, as well as our friends from West Hempstead and their entire contingency, who are sponsoring this morning in memory of Bruce Wenger, Dov Ari Ben Yisrael. That is sponsored by Rina Flaum, Adina and David Frankel, Lisa and Ari Keen, Risa and Mordechai Palik, Anat and Eli Schick, Merrill and Jeremy Strauss, and Sarah and Aharon Traurig. And we thank all of you for your participation, and we hope that Dov Ari Ben Yisrael will have an Aliyas HaNeshama from our learning today. Just a reminder, this Matzai Shabbos, we have the opportunity to give a warm, welcoming embrace to Louis Har, who is the Argentinian hostage who was freed 2 months ago. He will be visiting New York for a very short trip, and he will be in our shul on Matzai Shabbos, 9:15 p.m. For those who are concerned that they won't get in because of what happened last time, I don't know what to tell you. You may not get in, but we are having a live hookup in the gym and the Leon Mayer so that everyone can participate. And I think Rabbi Axelrod's words last time around were very instructive, that whether you get in or you don't get in, the point is really not about us. The point is about showing support. The point is about sharing our love. I think it's an opportunity for us to make a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. These are people, this is a family that has no affiliation whatsoever with anyone from our kinds of communities. And it's been a very special journey over the last couple of months, not only with myself, but Rabbi and Rebbetzin Wallowick of Chabad have also been very involved. And it's something that I think we should build on. It's something I think we should encourage. And I would really hope that there won't be any room in this building on Matzai Shabbos, because I hope that our community will come out to show support and to show love and to thank them for making the trip out here, even though it is difficult for them to do. I know nobody wants to hear about Pesach, but Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag, we know that the Shulchan Aruch says, quoting in Gemara Maseches Pesachim on Dav Vav, that Shalom Midarshim Behilchos Achag Kodem LePesach Shloshim Yom, that 30 days before we celebrate Pesach, we have to start thinking about, we have to start looking into the issues, we have to start considering all the different things that have to be put into place. And this is already something that we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu, that 30 days before Pesach, he already started to prepare the Jewish people, and that is what we all need to do as well. Based on that, the Shulchan Aruch says, it is not just in theory a nice idea, it is something that goes beyond that. The Shulchan Aruch says that because 30 days before Pesach, we need to already be involved in the preparation. Therefore, says the Shulchan Aruch, if somebody is going to leave their home within 30 days to Pesach, they need to already do a bedikas chametz. So if you're leaving your house 2 weeks before Yom Tov, and you're going to Israel to be by your children or your grandchildren or by your parents or whoever it may be, you need to do a bedikas chametz before you leave. Let me just clarify, you do not make a bracha on that bedikas chametz. You only make a bracha if you're doing bedikas chametz on the night before Pesach. But if you're leaving your home beforehand, you must do a bedikas chametz. Now, you may ask, why would somebody have to do a bedikas chametz when I'm planning to be away for Yom Tov? I don't have any interest in being in my house here in the neighborhood. Why do I have to check my house? My father always likes to tell the story that many years ago, there was a group of people in Washington Heights who were going away for Yom Tov. And at the time, it was not so in style for people to go away. And this was a group that decided all together, for whatever reason, they were going to spend Yom Tov together in a certain hotel, in a destination, and they were all supposed to fly out on Erev Pesach to this program, wherever it may have been. And there was a massive snowstorm on Erev Pesach, and as a result of that, everybody's flights were canceled. As a result of that, they all ended up being in their homes for Yom Tov without any food. So, okay, the community can help out with food, but the community cannot really help you clean your house for Pesach in one afternoon. It's not so easy to do that. So that is the reason why one has to make sure that they do a bedikas chametz before they leave their home, because you never know whether you will have some kind of reason, an emergency, hopefully a happy emergency. Your children will have good reasons to have you stay home. But whatever it may be, there's a reason why we have this halacha of making sure that we do a bedikas chametz. And from here we see Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag, we have to already make sure that we do whatever we can to be ready and prepared. The Maharil, the Gedolei Chachmei Ashkenaz, one of the greats of Chachmei Ashkenaz, said that 30 days before Pesach, it would make sense that we should already be careful. Shelo lasos chametz ba'ofen she'efsher lahasira b'nakel. Don't bring chametz into places where it's hard to get it out. So it's very hard if you may, by chance, have six little boys in your house. It may be a hard thing to do. But for anybody else in the room that doesn't have the same consideration, it would be a good idea. Maybe don't bring chametz into difficult locations where you may not remember. So already now, we should start thinking about that. We should make it more convenient for us to remove the chametz. And in doing so, we should just have a little bit more of an understanding of a mindfulness of what it is that we are looking forward to when we start preparing ourselves for Pesach. An insight that I saw last year from Rav Pam. Rav Pam was the Rosh Hashiva of the Yeshivas Torah Vadas. He was a tremendous Rosh Hashiva, but also a tremendous person. All the stories about him say a lot about his personality and about his sensitivity and his caring. So he pointed out that every year before Pesach, this year happens to be different because we had 2 months of Adar. But on a regular year before Pesach, we read Parshas Tzav on Erev Pesach. That is what we always do. The Shabbos before Pesach, we always read Parshas Tzav. Most of the reason why we do that is because Parshas Tzav talks about kashering our utensils. And before Pesach, that is something that many people need to do. They need to kasher their kelim. It's not like the luxury that we have today where we have different sets of pots. Back in the days, people had one set of pots, and that was it. And therefore, kashering was something that was a major event before Pesach. So the Psukim and Parshas Tzav not only talk about that, Rav Palm points us to the fact that the Psukim and Parshas Tzav also describe the act of Trumas Hadeshen. What is Trumas Hadeshen? Trumas Hadeshen actually is probably the job in the Beis HaMikdash that is not so exciting. There's a lot of excitement in the Beis HaMikdash every day. There are Levim that are playing music, there are Levim that are singing, there are Kohanim that are offering Karbanos, there are people coming in. Lots going on. Trumas Hadeshen is not something that seems very exciting. That is actually cleaning off the ashes from the Mizbeach from the day before. So you're basically the garbage collector. So you're collecting garbage in a very holy place. But it's not something that was such a coveted job. And this was the first avoda that was done every single day. Before you start a new day of work, you have to make sure to clean up from the day before. And therefore, the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Yuma that for all the different services in the Beis HaMikdash every day, who is going to be the one who is singled out to offer this carbon? Who is going to bring it onto the Mizbeach? Who is going to do all the different activities that need to be done? That was done by a lottery. Every day they would put a lottery in for which Kohanim were around, which were available, and they would decide in that way who had the privilege of being involved. When it came to the act of Trumas Hadeshen, there was no lottery because it was not a job that everybody was excited to do. And therefore the Gemara says whoever was first to get there in the morning had the privilege of cleaning off the Mizbeach. And then the Gemara says at some point there were many different Kohanim who were vying for the opportunity. They realized it was something special. And at that point they changed the system. And they said whoever would run up the Kevesh of the Mizbeach, that was about 50 or 60 feet high, whoever was able to run up quicker would be the one to get there first, and he would be the one to have the opportunity to be cleaning off the Mizbeach. That's the way the system used to work. Then the Gemara says, on one occasion, there were 2 Kohanim running up the ramp of the Mizbeach. Both of them were fairly close to the top. Each one was eyeing the other and nervous that they were going to lose the opportunity to their friend who was right next to them. Upon seeing his friend come closer, one Kohen deliberately pushes his colleague off of the Mizbeach. Can you imagine? On the Mizbeach, running up to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, and you push somebody off. And the Gemara says that he broke his leg or something terrible happened to him because he had a very big fall from the top of the ramp of the Mizbeach. After that troubling episode, the Gemara says that now they went to a lottery system, even for this, because look what could happen. You can have 2 people who are running up to do the job, and somebody is pushed over and gets hurt as a result of this competition that they had. That's the unfortunate incident that the Gemara says. Says Rav Palm, this is another reason why we read Parshas Tzav before Pesach. Because he says, in our homes, we are all involved in very sacred work. And it's not cleaning off the Mizbeach, but it's cleaning up our homes for Pesach. And Rav Palm says, think deeply into your own experience of preparing for Pesach and ask yourself, how many of your children have been thrown off of the ramp in your preparation for Pesach? How many children have been subject to your raising your voice as a result of your wanting to have your house clean for Pesach? How many children have been physically injured or emotionally injured and scarred because of our interest in making sure that our homes are ready. Says Rav Pam, we read Parsha Sab before Pesach to remind ourselves, don't let anybody fall off of the Mizbeach in your preparation for Pesach. Pesach is very important, and it's nice to have our homes the way we want them to be, but it's also very important to remember the personalities that are in our homes and to make sure that they are going to go into the celebration of Yom Tov with the right frame of mind and that they should be happy about the experience of celebrating Pesach and preparing for it. So as we know, Pesach in particular requires a tremendous amount of preparation. I would say it's probably disproportionate to many of the other Yamim Tovim. Of course, before Sukkot, we buy a Dalad Minim, we build a Sukkah. Of course, before Rosh Hashanah, we try to figure out where we're going to sit and where we're going to daven and who we're going to listen to and where we're going to blow the shofar. Everybody has to make the arrangements, but the bottom line is there is nothing that comes close to the preparation that is required for Pesach. The cleaning, the cooking, the koshering, the shopping, the toveling, the booking flights, whatever you're going to do, figuring out which room everyone's going to sleep in, all of that is a part of the preparation that is necessary for Pesach. But in truth, the Ramchal, the Mesilas Yesharim, writes that hachana, preparation, is not something that is limited to the celebration of Pesach. It is something that is essential for all the mitzvahs that we perform throughout the duration of the year. Let's read the Ramchal together here in number Aleph. Says the Ramchal as follows, Midam Maisim Hamadrichim Esa Adam, Lavo Lidei Mida Shel Tahara. We all strive to live lives of purity, to live lives of spiritual interest. Says the Ramchal, if you want to live such a life, if you want to have that experience and that opportunity, the Ramchal writes, what can bring a person to that kind of experience? Hu ha-hazmana le-divrei ha-Torah va-mitzvah. That is when you prepare yourself for the experience of a mitzvah that you're about to do. V'hainu shelo yikaneis b'kiyum ha-mitzvah be-pesach pis'om. Don't come into a mitzvah unprepared. Don't just show up impromptu. When you know you have a mitzvah to do, you have to be prepared in advance to do so. I remember as a child, it used to drive us crazy, but as an adult, I appreciate it more. My father used to come wake us up in the morning. That's a Shabbos morning. I assume during the week he didn't wake us because he was probably out of the house. I don't know. But Shabbos morning, he would come wake us up. I remember the first time I had a friend over from actually this neighborhood. We were friends from camp. He came over to my house, and his mother told me many years later that it was so shocking to her son that Rav Schechter came to wake us up in the morning. I said, who's supposed to wake you? Like, every father wakes the children up. Who's supposed to wake up in my house? Anyway, so I remember my father used to come up, and he would wake us up, and he'd be like, we're going to be late for shul. And I was looking at the clock. I'm like, shul's in 40 minutes. Shul's in 35 minutes. But to him, if you weren't 15 minutes early to shul, you're late. So I once asked him, why are you waking us up so early? He's like, well, they daven so quickly. If we don't start karbanos, if we don't start this so much in advance, I'm like, okay, we'll get there. But it made an impression. You want to know what real tefillah is? Real tefillah is a person who understands that there's preparation that's needed before the tefillah. That you don't just show up and come the last second or come into the davening. You show up in advance. You make sure you're ready. You make sure you have a seat and you're comfortable and you're prepared. And says the Ramchal, that's the way it needs to be with every mitzvah. She'ein daito miyusheves alav. If a person is rushing, you're not going to have the presence of mind to be calm. V'yuchal lehisponein b'mashehu oseh. You're not going to be able to appreciate what it is that you're actually doing. If you're rushing into a mitzvah, it's hard to really understand what it is that you're doing. Ela yazmin atzmo ledavar, says the Ramchal, we should plan in advance. We should prepare ourselves in advance. V'yachin libo b'misun, and we should wait with anticipation, achi kanes behisbonunus, until we have the opportunity to come into a mitzvah with an awareness, with a knowledge, with a realization. Va'az yisbonin, and then says the Ramchal, if you do that, you will understand mahu holech lasos. Number one, what is it that I'm actually doing? And number two, lifnei mi hu holech lasos. Who am I doing it for? Who am I doing it for? You can go to davening every day of your life and never stop once to think, who am I doing this for? What's the purpose? What's the goal? So does it mean that you didn't daven? You did daven. But does it mean that you have no idea what the davening is all about? Maybe. What a tragedy for you. Not for the Ribono Shel Olam. God will be okay. Question is, do I take anything meaningful out of the experience that I do so many times a day, so many times a year? Do I understand what it is that I'm doing? Just yesterday, somebody called me and asked that they're not able to pay attention to the entire duration of davening from beginning to end. So they said, you know, I feel uncomfortable, but like, should I leave out certain parts of the davening because I could be really into it for part of it? If I say, brachos, baruch she'amar, ashrei yishtabach, birchos kriya shema shemona esrei. So I said, yes, the Shulchan Aruch says, tov lomar ma'at bekavana mehar b'shelo bekavana. The Shulchan Aruch writes in the very beginning of our Chaim that it's better to say less and have intent and understanding as to what it is that I'm saying than to try to say more and not pay attention to the words that I'm saying. My father told me many, many times, on Monday and Thursday we say a longer tachnun than we say during the other days of the week. I don't know where the myth came from that women shouldn't say tachnun. There's nothing to that. Women should say tachnun. Tachnun is very important. Tachnun is actually, it's an experience of, an extension of the Shulchan Aruch. That's the way, I'm sorry, of the Shemona Esrei. Now you know how late I was up last night. It's an extension of the Shemona Esrei, and tachnun is almost like the finishing off of the Shemona Esrei. So tachnun is very important, but on Monday and Thursday, which we consider to be an ace ratzon, it's an ace tefillah, more so than any other day of the week. So on Monday and Thursday, we say a longer tachnun. We ask for bakashos tachanunim. We ask for certain things more so than we would on any other day, but it's very long. It's about 3 pages long, the introduction to tachnun. So my father told me that his personal practice is, when you go to a shul and they say tachanun on a Monday and Thursday, there's no way you can say all the words. How the chazan does it, I don't know. But there's no way to say all the words. So my father said he splits up the Behu Rachum, which is what we add on Monday and Thursday. He splits it up into 3 segments. This Monday he says the first segment. Thursday he says the second. The next Monday he says the third. And he said this way, I only say 2 paragraphs instead of 8, but at least the 2 paragraphs that I say, I can say every word and I finish it. And then I continue next week. Now you have to be mindful enough to know where you're up to and to remember. You have to have such a head. But the point being that it's best to say things even less, but to say it with kavana, with understanding, than to try to finish everything. And says the Ramchal, when a person prepares in advance, when we understand what it is that we're doing and who it is that we're doing it for, we have an opportunity to really appreciate the mitzvah that we are involved with. In Parshas Yisro, we're told that Moshe Allah El HaElokim. Moshe went up to Har Sinai, Vayikra Elav Hashem in Ahar Leimor. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu called him, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu summoned him from the mountain. So the Arachaim HaKadosh asked, Tzarech Ladas, Lama Allah Moshe Kodem Sheyikra Lo Hashem. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu go up to the mountain before God called him? Would somebody show up to your house without being invited? And then you open the front door and you see they're standing there. It's a little creepy. It's strange. So what's Moshe Rabbeinu doing there, says the Arachaim. It says, Moshe ala el ha'elokim. Moshe went up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then, only afterward it says, that God called out to him. That sounds backwards. Says the Arachaim, the answer is, ki bechinas ha'kedusha. You need to know that the way to come to any spiritual elevation in life is, ela lemazmin osa u'meir al hadavar. The only way to come to a meaningful experience is if I initiate, if I go out of my way, if I prepare. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, I know that I'm about to have this experience with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The only way for it to be meaningful is if I take the first step and I go out of my way to show him that this is something I'm preparing myself for. So he goes up onto the mountain and he waits. And the Ribono Shel Olam sees him and says, Moshe Rabbeinu, please come join me. But the first thing that needed to happen, says the Arachaim HaKadosh, was Moshe Rabbeinu needed to take the initiative. Moshe Rabbeinu needed to go out of his way to show that this was important to him, to show that he was willing to prepare. Now the problem is, the Sfas-Emes wonders, Sfas-Emes, one of the great Gerer Rebbes in the late 1800s, passed away in the early 1900s. So the Sfas-Emes wonders, why is it that it is so important to have Hachana? And sometimes he writes, Hachana could even be greater than the mitzvah itself. How can that be? How could it be that the preparation is even greater than the mitzvah itself? And he gives 2 explanations to understand his point. Number one, he says, how long does the mitzvah last? So you shake a lulav. 30 seconds? It's fleeting. It's very short-lived. But says the Sfas-Emes, the preparation sometimes can be far more expansive than the mitzvah itself. So think about a wedding. How long do we prepare for a wedding? So it depends. But everybody knows you prepare a lot longer than the wedding itself actually lasts. For those who have prepared for a wedding, you ever turn around in the middle of the simcha and say, 6 months of preparation and it's almost over? And the answer is, yeah. 6 months of preparation is the only reason why this was so special. It doesn't last so long, but the preparation is all part of what makes it very, very special. And therefore, says the Sfas Emes, this is reason number one why sometimes the hachana itself, sometimes the preparation itself, can be even more powerful than the mitzvah observance that we're about to do. Because the preparation is what makes it special. The preparation can be something that can be drawn out for a long time, that we can really invest a lot into. And that number one, he says, is the first reason why he feels that this is something that is very, very valuable. Aside from that, he says, it could be that one really doesn't know what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu have in mind when we talk about preparing ourselves for a mitzvah or doing a mitzvah. You ever look in a Sfardi sitter? Right? You look in a Sfardi sitter. Underneath every Shem Hashem, there's little words and letters and little kavanas you're supposed to have. And I have no idea. I'm just trying to say the words of the sitter. That's all. I can't pay attention to all these other things. But those mekubalim who understand all of that, those who are tuned into it, have a far deeper meaning to every word they're saying than what I say. You ever looked at all the L'shem Yichuds that are before every mitzvah? So my family happens not to say them. Some families do, some families don't. But when you look at that and it gives you a perspective and you start thinking about the Shemos and what this means and that means and this is for that, it's a whole other world that I'm not even familiar with. Says the Sfas Emes, there are layers upon layers behind every mitzvah that we do that we are not even familiar with at all. You think you understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you that you should shake a lulav on Sukkos? You think you know why the Ribono Shel Olam said you should eat matzah? So here I am, the Leil HaSeder, eating my matzah. I don't even know what to think. I'm just eating the matzah like I eat anything else, but I don't even know what I'm supposed to think. But the preparation that I put in beforehand, all of that is valuable. The mitzvah itself, whether I do it 100% with all the proper kavana, I don't know. I probably don't. But the preparation, I know, I'm giving it my all. And therefore, says the Sfas Emes, preparation is so important. So what does it mean to prepare for Pesach? I know preparing for Pesach means one thing for all of us in the room. But let me just shift perspectives before we get into that. There was a great tzaddik whose name was Rabbi Elazar Papo in the 1800s. He wrote a sefer that is very famous called the Pela Yoetz. In the Pela Yoetz, he writes that 30 days before Pesach, everyone has to make sure to try to start preparing themselves for Yom Tov. And how should we prepare ourselves for Yom Tov? He writes the following. Heyos of Nisan Nigalu of Nisan Asidin Lehigael, since we know that Nisan is a month of redemption, I didn't put it on here. This happened at 2:30 last night, this piece, so I'm sorry it's not here. Lachain. Chayiv Adam Biyamim Elulihis Orer. How do we prepare for Pesach, says the Pela Yoetz? Of course it means preparing our homes, preparing for the Seder, preparing a Haggadah. But beyond that, he says, it means this is a month where we talk about Geula. This is a month where we focus on redemption. This is a month where we look at the impossible reality that happened to the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. It doesn't make sense. We talk about it all the time. Everything in our religion is Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. But when you actually back up and you ask yourself, how did this actually happen? It was Biyad Chazaka, it was Ra Anetuya. There was nothing natural about it. There was no natural reason why any of this was able to happen. It was because the Ribono Shel Olam decided, Higi Azman Geulaschem. That, says the Pela Yoetz, is a way to start preparing for Pesach also. To think about a realistic possibility of Geula in your lifetime. Some people say the Ani Mamans every day. Achakelo b'chol yom shiyavo. You know, Senator Lieberman just passed away this week. His daughter spoke at the Levaya. I didn't have a chance to watch it, but somebody told me that she said in the middle, Chani said that her son walked into her room and said, where is Grandpa? And she said, he passed away. He's not here anymore. And the son, little child, said, okay, that's fine. I believe that he'll come back when Mashiach comes. So she said this at the Levaya. And everyone started laughing. They thought it was a joke. And then she had to correct everyone and say, I actually was not joking. We believe in this. We really do believe in this. We believe in the coming of Mashiach. We believe that there's going to be a Geula. Says the Pele Yoetz, you want to think about how to prepare for Pesach? Don't only think about cleaning your home, about which Haggadah you're going to use, about who's coming for the Seder, about where you're going to go, how you're going to pack up, what are you going to do. Think about the realistic possibility of Geula, of redemption, in our times. And not only to think about it. Lasos kol asher biyacholto. You should do everything you possibly can, he writes. Lishboch nafsho lifnei Hashem yomam v'layla al ha-geula. To pour your heart out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu every single day in preparation for Pesach. That we want a geula. We want a geula. That's a way to prepare for Pesach. If we didn't prepare that way in previous years, that's definitely a way to prepare for Pesach this year. Daven with sincerity for the next 3 weeks that we should have the opportunity to experience a geula. We need a redemption. There is no natural way for everything to work itself out the way things are right now. We need a geula. But says the Pele Yoetz, this is an appropriate time to think about what that means for us and to daven for that, to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu sincerely, when we see the horizon of Yetzias Mitzrayim in front of us, when we focus on that story, think about how that would translate into our times. What would that look like? If God was willing to make miracles again for us, what would that look like? What would it feel like? Would we be prepared to be a part of it? That's called preparing for Pesach. Getting in that frame of mind and that mindset. I saw last night, or this morning, in the Sefer Sifsei Chaim. Sifsei Chaim is Reb Chaim Friedlander. He writes the following. Am Yisrael b'Mitzrayim lo haya am bal zehus atzmit. The Jewish people in Egypt did not have their own identity. Hu haya muvla b'soch Mitzrayim. They were swallowed up in the culture of Egypt. Ke'uber b'mei imo. Like a embryo that is inside of the mother's womb. Doesn't have an identity of its own. Completely reliant, completely dependent on its mother. Shekol chayuso mimenu, says the Sifsei Chaim, v'zehu shibud Mitzrayim. What does it mean to be enslaved in Egypt? Doesn't just mean you are physically enslaved. Doesn't just mean you have to do terrible, back-breaking work. It also means that you have no identity. You are a slave. You represent me. You have nothing on your own. That's shibud Mitzrayim, says the Sifsei Chaim. Hashibud anafshi, mikor chiyuso shalam Yisrael haya betarbus Mitzrayim betumasa. We were so part of everything that Egypt represented, we had no identity on our own. And that's what geula means. I'm not dependent on anyone. I'm not dependent on Joe Biden. I'm not dependent on Putin. I'm not dependent on anybody in the world. I'm dependent on the Ribono Shel Olam. And American culture means nothing to me. And everything that we have is irrelevant. That's what geula means. Does it really resonate with us? Is that a possibility in my lifetime? That I can imagine such a thing? That I'm no longer going to be under the shackles? Not physical shackles. But here in the United States, we have good lives. Protests here and there. Problems here and there. For the most part, we have very good lives. But we are not negalim. We are not redeemed. We're in Shibud Mitzrayim. We are a part of the culture. We are dependent on everyone else around us. We are afraid of what they will say. We don't feel that we have the opportunity to express ourselves the way we should. Why is that? That's Shibud Mitzrayim. You want to prepare for Pesach, says the Sifsei Chaim. Think not only like the Pele Yoetz said about Geula, but think about what it means to be in your own Shibud Mitzrayim. Think about how many areas in your own life you are not doing what you're supposed to do because you're afraid of what other people are going to say, because you're concerned of how the public opinion is going to react, because you're worried about what the response is going to be to whatever behavior I want to take upon myself or whatever way I want to be. to become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's Shibud Mitzrayim. And that's what Geula looks like. I'm not dependent on anyone. I don't feel social pressures. I'm not part of the American culture. This is not my society. This is not who I am. That's what Geula means. So a few years ago, I came across a beautiful passage in the Haggadah Shel Pesach of Rav Mordechai Eliyahu. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, the previous chief rabbi of Israel, the Sephardi chief rabbi, a great Talmud Chacham, has a Haggadah that's called Avim Shel Yisrael. In that Haggadah, he writes that he used to say the following tefillah as him and his family prepared for Pesach every year. So let's read it together, because for me, once I saw this, it changed my whole perspective of what the chore of cleaning our houses is all about. So let's see. Tov v'ro'i l'chabin lefnei hanakiyos v'lo markach. It is worthwhile for a person to say this tefillah before they start the cleaning in their home. Hareini minake asabayis u'mechuvenes bazeh. I am cleaning, I am washing, I am dusting my house, and my intention in doing so is l'kayim mitzvah saseh min ha-Torah l'hashbis se'or v'chametz. The reason why I'm doing it is because the Torah wants me to do it. Because the Torah wants me to get rid of all the chametz from my possession. Ve'ata, hakel, hagadol, hagibar, ve'anora. And you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I ask you in response to everything that I'm doing, to all the effort and energy that I'm putting into it. Ta'azreini, you should help me, l'nakos es machshev osai. You should help me to purge, to purify my own thoughts. Don't only give me the courage to clean up my house. Allow me to clean up myself. L'nakos es ma'asai. L'tahir es beisi. To disinfect my house, not from chametz, but to get rid of anger in my house. To get rid of strife in my relationships. To get rid of frustration that I have with certain members of my family. Shelo yikanes babayis hazeh yetzer hara u'machlokes. God help me that there should not be arguments in my home, that I should learn to be exhibiting a little bit more self-control. Shetashpia ala bayis hazeh shefa shel tahara v'kedusha, the same way I am doing everything to make sure my home is prepared, allow me to have the purity in other ways in my home as well. Amen v'chein yihi ratzon. And I saw that, and it just changes the whole perspective. We clean, and we invest, and we work hard, and we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to invest the same in all of us. You know, I was thinking, when we do Bedikas Chametz, we take 10 pieces of bread and we put it around our house, and then we look for them. I don't know, maybe take 10 pieces of paper this year and write down 10 things that you really would love to accomplish, and think about how you're going to get there, and think about what the obstacles are. The whole act of cleaning for Pesach is not only one that is external. It's one that's supposed to be reflective. It's one that's supposed to be internal as well, for us to think for ourselves of how it is that we can change not only our homes, but how we can change the people in our homes, how we can change the relationships in our homes, how we can change the way we interact with each other as well. And that, of course, is an opportunity that we have as we prepare for Pesach. Our modern-day homes are far bigger and more complex than anything that regular people had 100 years ago or 150 years ago, for sure. We have all kinds of appliances. We have furniture. We have bookcases. We have closets. We have couches. We have wardrobes. We have more clothing than anyone knows what to do with. We have so many rooms in our homes. Even a small house has more rooms than an entire family used to live in. Back 150 years ago, there was no such reality. So preparing for Pesach back then was something that was obviously much easier. When it says that on the night before Pesach, you bodek for the chametz, you go around your home and look for the chametz, that's because it only took them one night to do that, because the house only had one room. And you looked around the house, and you searched for the chametz, and you found whatever there was left. And there was nothing else stored anywhere else. We didn't have an office and an apartment in Florida and a house in Israel. We didn't have all these things with a car. Nobody had all of these things that we have today. And that is why today it becomes a lot more of a pressure, far more of an anxiety, much more of a burden, shall we say, but an opportunity as well. And of course, while we must focus on the bedikah, and of course the Shulchan Aruch says that there's a chumrah that people should be doing everything. He doesn't talk about the toothbrushes. I actually got two different people this week who asked me the same question, and I was surprised. I never heard this before. Do we have to buy a new broom for Pesach? I never heard of that. I said, wow, that's something new. You wash your broom before Pesach? Wow, I guess I'm just, I've never done Pesach right. I don't know, you're all very special. So two different people, I'm going to let you guess whether they were men or women, asked me the Shaila this week whether they have to buy a new broom for Pesach. And I said, I don't think so. But the Nashim Tzidkaniyus in this room seem to disagree with me. And that's fine. So let me just talk a little bit about this, because I think it is important that we understand what are the mitzvahs that we actually have to make sure that we do on Pesach and before Pesach. Number one, everything that we do in life comes at a cost. There's always a trade-off for everything, right? If I'm going to spend so much energy preparing for Pesach, I'm not going to enjoy Yom Tov itself. Correct? Right. Everything comes with a price tag. So let's just think a little bit, what do I have to do for Pesach? What do I not have to do for Pesach? One thing that I have to do for Pesach is I have to make sure that I engage in the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov on Pesach. That's number one. And that mitzvah includes men and women. Men and women have an obligation to celebrate the Yom Tov, the holiday of Pesach, with no exception. So if that's the goal, then I need to think about how am I going to get there in a way that when I finally get to Pesach, I'm not collapsing. Everybody on Leil HaSeder, men and women, have an obligation to eat matzah, to eat maror, to drink four cups of wine. How am I going to get there? If I'm so exhausted and I'm so worn out and I've been so overwhelmed by everything I've done for the past month, then it's going to come Pesach and that's not going to be my experience. So that is something that we certainly need to factor into the equation. Now, perhaps some of the preparations for Pesach are somewhat exaggerated. And it's all based on Minhagim. It's because this is what our grandmothers did. But our grandmothers didn't have the houses that we have. They did not have the experience that we have. They did not have the amount of places and the amount of locations that need to be taken care of that we have. So just put it in perspective for a moment. What is... I'm not looking to mock or ridicule anything that anybody does. I'm just laying out what does the halacha demand of us and what perhaps is extra. So number one, first of all, one halacha that we need to be aware of is Shulchan Aruch says, if you have a room, she'ein machnisim bo chametz. If you have a room where you never bring chametz into it, you do not have to clean it, you do not have to check it. What would an example of that be? I don't know. In my house, there's chametz everywhere, in every room, in every closet, in every couch, in every pillow. I don't know. If you're at a different state, you remember that? I assume it's not just my kids. Cheerios were around when you were raising your kids too. So there's chametz everywhere. But if you have a family of adults who don't generally eat breakfast in the closet, right? So if that's the reality in your world, then why would you think that you have to be bodek chametz in a place where you would never think to bring chametz into it? Now, you know your house. Meaning, do I have to go through every drawer that has my socks in it? Every drawer that has my shirts in it? Do I have to worry that there's chametz? Why would I ever put chametz into any of those drawers? It's not reasonable to think that I would have to imagine that there's chametz there. And therefore, if you want to do a spring cleaning, do a spring cleaning, but don't blame it on Pesach. So the Shulchan Aruch says, you do not have an obligation to look for chametz or to clean for chametz in a place, she'ein machnisim bo chametz. If it's not realistic to imagine that chametz would have been there at all, then you don't have to check that. So that's number one. Number two, the Shulchan Aruch also makes very clear that if you have something that is less than a kezias of chametz, you don't have to worry about it. Now, the Mishnah Berurah writes, we are generally machmir, we try to get rid of everything. However, the Mishnah Berurah says everybody would agree that if you have less than a kezias of chametz that is metunaf, that is dirty, everyone would agree you don't have to worry about it, which means you don't have an obligation to start going through If you have a wood floor and there are little slats in the floor, you don't have to start going and brushing out every little bit because maybe there are some residue of chametz that are there. How many times has your floor been mopped since you ate the challah 6 months ago that may have some crumbs on the floor? I hope the answer is many, right? So you don't have to be concerned because the Mishnah Berurah writes that is certainly less than a kazayas of chametz and it is metunaf, it is dirty, it is not something anyone is interested in eating. Even if on Pesach I happen to notice that there are some crumbs there, I would never gather them together and say, hey, let me have some breakfast. Nobody's going to say that. And therefore, the Mishnah Berurah writes very clearly that that would not be an obligation for us to do. These are two halachas that I think people may not be so aware of, but two halachas that are very instructive about how we are supposed to go about our Pesach cleaning. What do we need to do? What do we not need to do? The Torah says you have to make sure b'yira b'yimatzeh, you have to make sure there's not going to be chametz in your home. Now, that means not only my own chametz, it means somebody else's chametz as well. And this is a great time to mention the story that happened a number of years ago. There are some women who have a minhag, and I would say it's a terrible minhag. Even if it's your family practice, you should get rid of it because it has no basis at all, and it's only looking for trouble. There are, I mean, I love everybody, but it's just something that you may not have thought of. There are some women who have the practice that whenever they do a hafrashas challah, they keep the little piece of challah aside, and on Erev Pesach, they take all the accumulated hafrashas challah from the entire year from the freezer, and they throw it into the fire. Okay, that is a minhag that some people have. Terrible minhag. Really a bad idea. Let me tell you why. The reason why is because that can be a major problem for Pesach. So here's what happened. A number of years ago, I think it was the first year that I was married, we were living in Washington Heights. We were the only couple who stayed in the Heights for Pesach because my parents actually lived there. Everybody else went away. So I had a friend who went to Baltimore to his in-laws. He calls me frantically on Erev Pesach and he says, I need you to drive to my parents' house in Far Rockaway to get the key, the extra spare key to my house in the Heights, to my apartment, because my wife's family has this wonderful custom of leaving all of the hafreshes challahs in the freezer. And we forgot to take them along with us to Baltimore when we left yesterday. It just wasn't the first thing on our mind. We were packing up the kids, and we left it there. I said, well, didn't you sell your apartment for Pesach? He said, yes, I did. But I said, then that really doesn't help. Why? Because I can't sell something that doesn't belong to me. So I'm only able to sell the chametz in my house that belongs to me. But the hafrasha that you do actually belongs to the chelek hakohuna. It belongs to the kohanim. So it doesn't belong to you. You take responsibility for that chametz, but it's not yours, so you can't sell it. And now we have a situation where somebody, had he not realized before Pesach started, would have violated bal yira u'bal yimatzeh mida oraisa every second of Pesach. That is very rare. It's very hard to do that. Most of us sell the chametz in our homes, so even if you find a box of cookies somewhere, it's sold anyway. Everybody does a mechiras chametz. This guy did a mechiras chametz, cleaned his house for Pesach, but would have still violated bal yira bal yimatzeh mida oraisa every minute of Yom Tov. Really bad minhag. Really bad idea. I had to go on Erev Pesach to Far Rockaway, get the key to his apartment, and then it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Where am I going to burn this? What am I going to do with it? It was a mess. Don't try it at home. That's the bottom line. Okay. I did it. What was I supposed to do? Okay. Now, we said, when you have a makom she'eim achnisim bo chametz, you don't have to check it. The problem is, how do you decide what is considered a makom she'ein machnisim mochametz? There's a famous story told about Reb Shmuel Salant. Reb Shmuel Salant was the Rav of Yerushalayim. Reb Shmuel Salant said that there was a couple that came to him in great distress on the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach. And they had just gotten married 3 weeks before, or 2 weeks before Yom Tov. And the woman said, I want a divorce. I don't want to remain married to him. And he said, what's the problem? What happened? So she said, I thought I was marrying a very ultra-religious person. I thought he was very careful. I thought he was very scrupulous and everything. And it turns out, every time I turn around, I see that there are kernels of wheat all over the floor in our house. And every time we thought we cleaned it up, there's more. This guy is just not careful. I know it's not me. And there's nobody else in our house, so I don't know what's wrong with him. So Reb Shmuel Salant is trying to figure out, how can it be? This guy comes from a religious home. What do you think? He's just walking around the house putting kernels of wheat all over the place? It doesn't make sense. Anyway, it turns out what happened was, there's an old minhag that I think the Gemara talks about it, that they used to throw wheat kernels at a chassan. Some kind of symbolism for that. I forgot what it is. His ufraf was right before Pesach, and they had thrown it when he got his aliyah in shul. They threw wheat kernels at him, and it was stuck in his shtreimel. Now it came Yom Tov, he put it on, and every time he took it on and put it on, every time he put it on and took it off. Over the course of Yom Tov, he had little kernels that were coming out, not realizing that that was there. Who would ever think that you have to do a bedikas chametz in your shtreimel, right? So when we talk about a makom shei machnisim bo chametz, you need to just be aware of what places are the considerations of where you may have had chametz in your house. Now, the million-dollar question that the Aruch HaShulchan asks is, we know that we all prepare ourselves for Pesach way in advance. Now it comes Leil Bedikas Chametz, and there's nothing left to do. My whole house is clean by the time Erev Pesach comes around, correct? So why do we do a Bedikas Chametz? Let's look at the Aruch HaShulchan together. This is a number, hey. Says the Aruch HaShulchan Veda, you should know, sheyesh shoalim, some ask, lefi minageinu, according to our practice, shehanashim minakim hachadarim vehatevos. I don't know why he says the women do, but something strange. He says that there are women who clean up the homes, all the different rooms in the house, every different cabinet. V'chala makomo shenishtamish behem chametz, kama yamim kodem ha-pesach. We do that weeks before Yom Tov. V'arla arba asar, then it comes the night of bedikas chametz, lo nimsa shum chametz, there is nothing there. Zulas masha manichim lechol belayla, the only thing we have left over is what we put on the kitchen table to eat for breakfast the next morning. But we know that that's where it is. That's not the bedikah, it's not on that. So what's the bedikah's chametz all about? Vehem is shumarim, and that is designated, it's set aside in Cain. Mahu inin habedikah sha'anu mivarchim. Then why do we make a bracha on bedikah's chametz? Hare kvar nivduku kala makomos. Did we not already look through the whole house to see what we have? And we have already gotten rid of everything. So he raises this question, and the truth is the Ramah already talks about in the days of the Rishonim, they wondered, if one knows that their house does not have any chametz in it, should I actually make a bracha on the bedika? Does that really make sense? So the Ramah comes to the conclusion, the truth is, when I do the bedika's chametz and I make a bracha on that, what I'm saying is, I'm looking around my house, in the case that I find chametz, that's what I'm trying to do. If I don't find chametz, okay, I didn't find chametz, but I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. So I'm allowed to make a bracha. But the Ramah says, because there's a question about a bracha lebatala, because maybe you won't find anything, therefore the Ramah says, we have developed a custom that we put out 10 pieces of bread on Leil Bedikas Chametz so that we for sure will find something. That we for sure will do something when we're doing the act of Bedikas Chametz. I remember, I think 4 or 5 years ago, someone in the shul had crazy story. So, you know, in Gourmet Glot, they sell everything today, or in Bingo, or wherever you're going to go, they sell everything. So they sell, I just saw somebody sent me a picture this week, they sell salt water. You know that. I'll make a deal with anyone in this room. I'll sell you salt water for half the price. Please don't buy salt water, really. Come on. So they sell everything. One of the things that they sell, which actually is helpful to people, is a bedikas chametz kit. Now, what comes along in the bedikas chametz kit? Of course, the spoon and the feather. What we're supposed to do with that, I don't know. I assume at some point there was something that you were supposed to do with a spoon and a feather. Now it doesn't help us, but okay. So you have the kit. What else is in the kit? Now we have the deluxe edition of the kit for bedikas chametz, where they give you the 10 pieces of bread wrapped up, where you don't have to do it on your own. Okay? So you buy that in Gourmet Glot, you put it out on Leil Bedikas Chametz, and for an extra fee, you can even have someone come and do the bedika for you. Anyway, so we have this Bedikas Chametz kit. Fine. A woman tells me she's going away for Pesach, but they're going to be home the first days. They're going to a hotel for the second days of Yom Tov. Great. Very nice. They're going to a hotel. So she asked me, is there anything I need to know? I said, yes. When you get to the hotel, you have to do a bedika. Now, they weren't going to a hotel which was used. It wasn't an exclusive hotel where it was being used for a Pesach program. They were basically going to wherever it was. They were bringing along all of their own food, and they were which is fine. And they were bringing their family to this hotel, wherever it may have been. They had a minion there, whatever it was, a bunch of families together. So I said, if this hotel is not something that was used the first day of Pesach, and there weren't frum people there, then you have to be concerned that nobody did a bedikas chametz in your room. Why would somebody do a bedika? So when you get there on Chol HaMoed Pesach, you have to do a bedikas chametz and check the room to make sure, under the beds, to make sure wherever it is that there's no chametz in your room. She says, great, I'm going to go to Gourmet Glot and buy the kit to bring along. I said, no, you can't do that. Why can't you do that? Because then you're bringing chametz with you on Pesach. So, let me just clarify. If you go away for the second days of Pesach, let's say you take out an Airbnb somewhere for Chol HaMoed Pesach, you go away with your family, you need to do a bedikah when you get there. But it doesn't mean that you bring along chametz with you to do that bedikah. It means that you have to check the house to make sure there is no chametz before you stay there, which is not so difficult, but it's something that everyone has to remember to do. If that is what you're going to be doing, traveling on Pesach, you have to make sure that you do a bedikah when you get there, even though it's in the middle of Pesach. Now, what happens if you find chametz, you find some cookies under the bed, which can happen. Sometimes you have a cleaning crew, they don't get everything. So what do you do? So it says you should be soref it. You should burn it on Pesach itself. You should dispose of it. You should burn it when you get there on Pesach and you find it. That is the appropriate way to deal with it. So the Ramah says that we have this custom that when we do bedikas chametz, we put out 10 pieces of bread. As I mentioned, if you go somewhere in the middle of Pesach, you do the bedikas chametz without putting out 10 pieces of bread because, of course, it is Pesach itself. But the poskim have a big discussion whether or not we actually have an obligation to do that, which is very fascinating because it gets into many other areas of halacha as well. Let's say, for example, we have a bracha that we say at night, a bracha of hamapil. So how do you say the bracha of hamapil? Maybe I won't fall asleep. Right? Someone told me you get to an age where you can't always fall asleep when you want to. Someone told me it happens. I can't imagine such a thing. But the question that the Rishonim deal with is, how can you say the bracha of hamapil? Maybe I won't fall asleep. But yet we say hamapil at night on the assumption that we will fall asleep. Correct? So then how come all of a sudden we're so concerned when it comes to the mitzvah of bedikas chametz? What are we going to do about the bracha? What if we don't find anything? What's the big deal? What if you don't fall asleep tonight? You make a bracha because I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Because I think I'm going to fall asleep, and I'm just going along with that program, with that assumption. Anyway, very interesting topic to discuss, but not enough time. I see we're already out of time. Bottom line is, we have a lot to think about when we clean our homes for Pesach. However, the Be'er Heitev writes in Hilchos Pesach, Siman Taf Samaches, in the name of the Rokeach. The Rokeach is one of the Gdolei HaRishonim in the 1100s. He writes, Lo Yomar Adam Kamo Toreach Pesach. A person should not say, Kamo Toreach Pesach, what a tircha it is to celebrate Pesach. In fact, the Rishalmi writes, maybe that's what it means. In the Haggadah we say, Ma Avoda Azos Lachem. Right? The Rasha turns to his parents and say, what is all this work for? So, I think some say in the name of the Yerushalmi that what the Rasha is complaining about is, was all this worth it? You worked so hard, was all of it worth it? All of that preparation just to get to Pesach, and now what? Says the Be'er Heitev to remember, Lo Yomar Adam Kamo Toreach Pesach. Let's just try to think from the perspective of our children and our grandchildren, what are they going to remember about Pesach in our homes? Are they going to remember us being without sleep and being very anxious and being very not ourselves? Are they going to dread the Pesach season in our homes? Or are they going to have very pleasant and happy memories about what Pesach means for a family, of what Pesach can mean for a family? What does it mean to celebrate a geula? What does it mean to prepare ourselves not only as a family to prepare our home, but to prepare ourselves to think about what we can do for each other, to think about how we can prepare in other ways than just cleaning? That is an avoda. I'm saying it's something that I think is very hard, something that I don't think is easy to accomplish, but it's something that if we give a little bit of mindfulness to, perhaps we can shift our perspective a little bit and make this experience and this opportunity of preparing for Yom Tov this year something that will be a meaningful, uplifting one for all of us. And as the Peli Yoetz writes, to use this month as an opportunity not only to prepare in the obvious ways, but also to prepare ourselves for what it means to have a realistic possibility of geula in our own lives. B'mheira, b'yameinu, amen v'amen.